Well, we've come down in 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 13. We're looking at what is the opinion or judgment of a false teacher? How does he see things? What does he base his actions upon? Well, it says here that they count it pleasure. And again, it's the word that we get our word hedonist from. Their pleasure was in following after their fleshly lust. The idea is they lived deliciously or luxuriously. They were seeking to gratify their carnal delights and worldly pleasures. And that's what they saw as their highest end of existence, what they were to live for. And so Peter goes on to tell us what it was they found their delight in. It says that they count it pleasure to riot. Now we think of a riot as when a crowd gets all stirred up and goes crazy and starts destroying things, breaking the law. But that's not the exact meaning here. We saw their opinion. They count it pleasure. Now we see their practice, which is to riot in the daytime. They have what's inside of them, their thinking, and then how they live it out in their behavior. They riot. Now the word riot here speaks of luxury or indulgence. It's the idea of carousing, reveling. It also has the idea of delicateness and daintiness. It's used that way in Luke chapter 7. Luke chapter 7 and verse 25. Jesus is asking the people about John the Baptist and why they wanted to go out and hear him preach. Verse 25, he says, "But what went ye out for to see? A man clothed in soft raiment?" No, he was clothed in camel's hair and had a leather belt. Not soft raiment. But where do you find soft raiment? Not out in the wilderness where John was. He says, "Behold, they which are gorgeously apparelled and live delicately are in king's court." Or do you find that kind of clothing and that kind of lifestyle in the court of a king? There they live delicately. And so it denotes effeminacy and softness. That's something you didn't certainly find in John the Baptist, and that's definitely something you didn't find in our Lord Jesus Christ. You know, if Jesus Christ is anything, he was a man's man. I mean, you think about how he lived his life and the ministry he conducted, and what it would have taken to be out there living under the sun or under the stars and going 3.5 years nonstop throughout the whole nation of Israel, ministering to so many people under rugged conditions and with so much opposition against him. He was no softie. Not at all. But the false teachers are. The word here, riot, means to live a voluptuous life. You give yourself over to the pursuit of pleasure. That was their life. It's the same that it says about the rich men who were defrauding their workers in James chapter 5. Says in James chapter 5, verse 5, after he says, "Go to now, you rich men," that's who he's addressing, unbelieving rich men, "and dishonest rich men, oppressive rich men. He says, you have lived in pleasure on the earth. Now that's how they lived their life on the earth, in the pursuit of pleasure. A pampered and excessive lifestyle. And he says, you have been wanton. Now they have this heart of desire for illicit things. You have nourished your heart as in a day of slaughter. Now you're living off the fat of the land and you're enjoying all the richness that this world provides out of a corrupt humor, you know, a wanton heart, and all you're doing is nourishing yourself like an ox for the slaughter, which will come in the judgment day. And so were these false teachers. What Peter's saying is that they lived in debauchery. They were bad. They had rotten lives. They only lived for sin and lust and pleasure. And that was all they cared for. And so the false teachers were pampering their bodies and they were indulging themselves in meat, drink, and immorality. Now they had that phrase that we read of as their life slogan. Let's eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. You know, grab for all the gusto you can get. Let's enjoy this life and the pleasures of it as much as we can, because we're not here for long. It's the exact opposite conclusion that a Christian would have. Let's deny ourselves and crucify our flesh and not follow after our lusts and pleasures in order that we might live a holy life to please God and look forward to being with Him and having perfect joy in eternity, something that this world cannot afford. Now, there were some examples of people like this in the Bible. There was Nabal. Remember Nabal back in 1 Samuel? 1 Samuel chapter 25. Nabal was a rich husbandman. He had sheep and other animals of that sort. He had a wife named Abigail who was a good woman, but he was anything but. Like she said later on, you know, he's just like his name. His name is Nabal. And the word Nabal, of course, according to the margin, means foolish or wicked. And he says, as is his name, so is he. He lives up to his name. I wonder what did that mother see when that son was born? Looked at that new baby and said, he's Nabal. I mean, newborn and already saying he's a foolish, wicked child. That's what she named him, and he lived up to it, unfortunately. And if you look down, we see some of that in verse 36. He's shearing his sheep, he's enjoying the fruit of his labors and the abundance of his riches. And in verse 36 it says, Abigail came to Nabal, and behold, he held a feast in his house, like the feast of a king. Now is this a celebration of God's blessing? He's trying to just be thankful and enjoy what God has given him and give God the glory for it? Not at all. He's living it up to the point where he's acting as if he were a king. He had unlimited resources. And Nabal's heart was merry within him. Now remember, David and his men had been camping near Nabal's sheep shepherds and giving them protection, and David was in a state of where he was on the run all the time and he needed help, and he sent messengers to Nabal and said, could you give us a present here? Help us in our need. He says, I don't know who you are. You know, a lot of servants run away from their masters. Why should I have to give you anything? And so he has all this abundance. David made a legitimate request. You know, he had done him service, and he asked if he might show his appreciation in a material way. Nah, sorry, buddy, you're on your own. It's not my fault you're having to run from Saul, you know, after you ran away from him. You're just an escaped slave. I don't have to do anything for you. And was it because he didn't have the means to help? No, here he is. He's got so much. He can put on a feast like this and be like a king. And so Nabal's heart was merry within him. Why? Because he was thankful to God for his blessings? No. The wrong kind of merry. So he was very drunken. Wherefore, she told him nothing less or more until the morning light. And then when she did tell him, God struck him, because his heart became like a stone, which it already was anyway, spiritually, and he died. And then Abigail became David's wife. But what I'm saying here is, here's a Nabal. More than he needed in the abundance of this world's goods, and he just lavished himself with them and refused to help others who were had need near him. He was a rioter. Another place where a riot was seen was in Sodom. Ezekiel chapter 16, we saw this when we were talking about Sodom and Gomorrah. Now, we should be thankful God has blessed us, but we should not hoard everything God has given us to ourselves when there are others in need around us that we could be sharing it with and helping. Legitimate need that God has set before us that we can do something to alleviate. Well, here's Sodom and Gomorrah. Of course, they did not help those in need. They tried to keep everything for themselves, and they overindulged themselves and neglected those around them who had less. Behold, this was the iniquity of thy sister Sodom. Pride, fullness of bread, and abundance of idleness was in her and in her daughters. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and needy. Now, she had more than she could use for herself, and she just, you know, again, probably guilty of gluttony and drunkenness. And because they had so much, they weren't dependent so much on their labors, and so they were idle and living, you know, a life of debauchery. They committed fornication, abomination before the Lord. Well, Sodom was that way. And then also we have an example in the New Testament in chapter 16 of Luke. Luke chapter 16, another person given over to riot. Is this a problem in America? You know, we're so richly blessed with the things of this world. We have abundance of material things. And we tend to overindulge. I don't know how many people I heard after Thanksgiving, I had a good Thanksgiving. I didn't get that sick overeating. Why are you supposed to? Does that make for a happy meal where you gorge yourself so much that you have to suffer for the few hours afterwards? It doesn't sound like that's what thanking God is intended to be. Being gluttony is a sin. But let's look at Luke 16:19. There was a certain rich man which was clothed in purple and in fine linen, the best of fabrics, and he fared sumptuously every day. He ate the best meals on a regular basis, daily. And then he had a beggar near his gate that he totally ignored. Why? He couldn't help him? He had no heart to help him. Now, this is mine. I want it for myself. I'm going to gorge myself before I'm going to share it with someone else. All he wanted was crumbs from his table, and that was asking too much. So again, here is a man living a life of riot. Now it's interesting, this word heathen is also closely related to the word Eden. We know that God made the world, and in the world, he planned the garden and put the man in it. And it was a garden that had everything man could ever need, a garden full of delights, you know, smells, sights, and tastes. And it was a perfect place before man sinned. And of course, that garden was named Eden, which is close to the word Eden. In other words, these false teachers that Peter's telling us about, they thought it was their Eden or their paradise or their very joy of heaven to commit all these hellish and excessive sins. As long as I can drink and eat and carouse and live in debauchery and wickedness and a rotten, corrupt life, I'm as happy as I'm in heaven. That's my heaven. And, you know, a lot of people do think of that. You know, they think of their carnal pleasures, their lust here, and they project that into eternity, and they think, oh, good, I'll have more of that and better of that in heaven. And they carnalize and materialize heaven, eating, drinking, you know, partying, reveling, and that's how they view it. You know, the Muslims have their 72 virgins. You know, they can only have 4 or 5 wives here or there, they can have 72. See, it's even better than yours. So that's about how people, in other words, if their lust is all they live for, then how can they enjoy heaven unless it's more of the same and better? They have no idea of the holiness and the spirituality and purity of heaven. And they just look at it as a continuation of what they have on earth, only more so. And that's a sad thing. Well, the next thing we want to look at, quickly, is when Peter says these false teachers are behaving so basely. He says that they count it pleasure to riot when? In the daytime. Now, what's the significance of that? What do they mean in the daytime? Well, sometimes day is taken metaphorically as a time of light, in the sense that we are in the time of illumination. We have great knowledge in the scriptures given us from God of who God is and what his character is and what he expects of us and how we should live our lives. There's right under all this illumination and knowing better than ever in the history of the world what God expects of us and how these kind of things are wrong in his sight, they do it anyway. They ignore all that and go right ahead with their wicked lifestyle. When it talks about they riot in the daytime, it's really expressing their impudence. They don't care. Who knows it? God or man? They're going to live like this. This is what they want to do. And it doesn't matter to them if people see it or not, or what God says about it or not. Well, normally, when you have something in your life that's wrong, you try to keep it under wraps so that no one knows about it. That's a normal thing with men. You remember in Job chapter 31, what did Adam do when he sinned? Well, first he made some fig leaves to try to cover himself in his nakedness. And then he tried to hide in the trees of the garden from the Lord. You know, in Job 31, verse 33, it says, if I covered my transgressions as Adam, or it says in the margin, after the manner of men, by hiding my iniquity in my bosom. Normally, if you're doing something wrong, you try to hide it. You try to cover it up from view, so no one sees it. That's normal. Why? Because you're ashamed. And so the normal thing for people to do is when they are showing or committing bad behavior is they do it in the dark or where it's hidden. hi, Mom and Dad, I'm going to steal that $5 on your counter. See it. They wait till you're gone, then they take it. Let's look at some verses. John chapter 3. Verse 20. For everyone that doeth evil hateth the light, neither cometh to the light, lest his deed should be reproved or discovered. They want to hide their sin. They don't want it exposed, brought out in the open, which is what light does. If your house is dirty and you're in the dark, you don't notice. You turn the light on, you see the dirt. Well, they don't want the light on. They try to avoid it. In Job, again, chapter 24, Job 24, I start at verse 14. Here's how people operate normally. Well, you read the news or you watch the news or whatever, and what do you hear? Last night at 1 a.m., so-and-so was shot on such and such a street. Almost every morning you hear about the things that happened the night before. And then once in a while they say, in broad daylight, in the middle of the day, someone shot someone. And it's like, oh, it's like a shot. Like broad daylight? Well, why is that? Well, let's look at verse 14. The murderer, rising with the light, kills the poor and needy, and in the night is as a thief. The eye also of the adulterer waits for the twilight, saying, no eye shall see me, and disguises his face. For the morning is to them even as the shadow of death. They don't want to have the morning come, because then they got to run and hide because of what they've done. If one know them, they are in the terrors of the shadow of death. That's why witnesses get killed. I don't want him telling what he saw. Notice verse 13 explains why this all happens. They are of those that rebel against the light. They know not the ways thereof, nor abide in the paths thereof. They stay away from the light so they can carry on their evil deeds. Yeah, verse 16. In the dark they dig through houses which they had marked for themselves in the daytime. Or they stake it out in the day, and then they commit the act at night. They know not the light. Look with me at Proverbs chapter 7. You know, another specific example that Job mentioned. Proverbs 7, verse 6, it talks about immoral people and when they commit their crimes. It says, for at the window of my house I looked through my casement, I beheld among the simple ones, I discerned among the youths a young man void of understanding. A lot of people boast about their exploits. I was with so-and-so, and I did this and that. You know what the Bible says? That's nothing to boast of. You're showing that you are a simple person, void of understanding, or you wouldn't do those things. It says, near her corner, and he went the way to her house, when? In the twilight. In the evening, in the black and dark night. Behold, there met him a woman with the attire of a harlot and subtle of heart. So he's looking for it, and she's there waiting for it, and when the dark and the opportunity come together, they commit their crime. And that's what we saw in 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 7. Remember there, it talked about day and night. Again, using them metaphorically. Verse 7, they that sleep, sleep in the night, and they that be drunken, are drunken in the night. When do you go to the bar? Noon? Now, some people are pretty hooked on their alcohol to that point. They usually go after dark. And you get to the bar, and what happens? It's all dimly lit. And everyone's out in there supposedly having a good time. Well, they're drunken in the night. And that's the time of their behavior. And let me show you an example of how that was brought out in Acts chapter 2. You remember in Acts chapter 2, it's the day of Pentecost, and the Holy Spirit comes down upon the assembled disciples, the 120 believers in the upper room, and they all spake with tongues. And as they did that, it gathered a crowd together. People were drawn together to see what was going on. What was their reaction? In verse 12, it says, they were all amazed, and they were in doubt, saying one to another, what means this? What's going on here? What is this all about? Others mocking. Now, their first reaction was, let's come up with a way to ridicule them and explain it away. Others mocking said, these men are full of new wine. They're drunk. That's why they're babbling like this. Of course, they were talking in known languages. They weren't babbling, but they tried to explain it away. They must be drunk. That's how they can... Yeah, whenever you're drunk, you can speak fluently another language, right? You can't even speak English when you're drunk. How are you going to speak fluently another language? But anyway, what did Peter say in verse 15? No, don't think this. These are not drunken as you suppose, seeing it is but the third hour of the day. It's 9 o'clock in the morning. They're not going to be drunk at 9 o'clock in the morning. That's a ridiculous conclusion. But see how he could argue? You're not going to be doing these things in the middle of the morning. Ephesians 5, 11 and 12. Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them, rebuke them, for it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them. Where? How? In secret. You shouldn't even talk about things that they do in their secret, in their dark times. They're shameful. But here's the problem. There's a loss of shame. These false teachers had no shame. And they were not afraid to sin publicly and right in the open, in the daytime. Now let's look at a couple verses and then we'll finish our thought here. Jeremiah chapter 3. If I can bring in some modern examples of this. Television is shameful. The movies are shameful. Entertainment is shameful. The way people present themselves, their attire or lack of attire, the way they touch themselves and they gyrate themselves, if they had any sense of decency, you would never put yourself on a stage and act like that. That is horrible. I mean, you look at it like, this is not entertainment, this is debauchery. This is, you know, you hear the words of the song, you see the time of music and how it gets everyone in the crowd bouncing around and swaying to the music, and it's just promoting every kind of... I mean, I would be embarrassed if you had any sense of decency. As I said, you would never appear in public and act like that, or talk like that, sing things like that, just like that, or whatever you want to call it. It's terrible, and yet it's common. And it really comes down to people have become so hardening their sins that they don't care. And that's acceptable. And the public, they take it right in. Instead of saying, go away. Anyway, Jeremiah chapter 3, verse 3, it says there, therefore the showers have been withholden, and there hath been no latter rain, and thou hast a whore's forehead, thou refusest to be ashamed. That's a characteristic of a whore. Stand on the street corner, proposition men, and do filthy, vile things and not feel any sense of wrongdoing. They refuse to be ashamed, even though they should be. Jeremiah chapter 6 and verse 15, Were they ashamed when they had committed abomination? And I'm talking, the things that are going on are abominations. Something like homosexuality should not be a public subject for discussion. And they're promoting it and making it a crusade. It's unbelievable. It's abomination. Were they ashamed? No. They were not at all ashamed. Neither could they blush. No embarrassment at all. It says, therefore they shall fall among them that fall. At the time that I visit them, they shall be cast down, saith the Lord. They won't cast down their countenance, but God will cast them down for their sins. Isaiah chapter 3. Speaking of sodomy, it says, the show of their countenance doth witness against them. I mean, you can see right in their face, they're so brazen and bold in their bad behavior. You know, like they dare you. Don't you say anything about what I'm doing or say anything against it. I'm going to do this whether you like it or not. No, it's just like shoving it in your face. Which is what our politicians are doing now. They're trying to pass laws to condone immorality. And we have to have that in society as a allowed practice because our politicians are, again, just like pushing it right out. That's what he says. The show of their countenance doth witness against them, and they declare their sin is Sodom. They hide it not. They openly proclaim what they're doing. Woe unto their soul, for they have rewarded evil unto themselves. It's sad to see. You know it's where it's going to end. God's going to deal with it. They're going to be judged, and yet they won't listen. Just a couple more. Zephaniah chapter 3. Zephaniah chapter 3 and verse 5. All right, the contrast between God and sinners. The just Lord is in the midst thereof. He will not do iniquity. Every morning doth he bring his judgment to light. He faileth not. But the unjust, here's the contrast, the unjust knoweth no shame. Things, if they understood what they were doing and what God thought about it and what it was doing to themselves and how it looked to those who know what is right, they would not dare say or do the things they do. But they have no shame. They don't see anything wrong with it. They go ahead like it was nothing. And they don't care what anyone thinks. Our last one is Numbers 25. I'm going to give an example of what we're talking about here. You remember Balaam, the false prophet, we're going to be talking about him later in Peter. He was hired by Balak to curse the people of Israel, and God would not let him curse them, but rather he blessed them. And so what did he do? He gave counsel to the king. You know what he told them? If you can bring Israel into sin, then God will judge them. In other words, I can't curse them and bring them under God's judgment, but if you can get them to sin, then God will judge them for their sin. And so he counseled them to send their women to the Jews, and they started committing fornication with them and worshiping their idols, and this brought God's judgment on them, and he was putting many of the people to death. And so, what happened? The judgment of God is in process. Many people are dying. And while this is all going on, verse 6, it says, behold, one of the children of Israel came and brought unto his brethren a Midianitish woman in the sight of Moses. All right, here's Moses, the leader of the people. And what did Moses say? You need to kill the men who are committing fornication with Baal Peor, both physical and spiritual fornication. And here, the followers of the Lord are slaying those who are guilty of this sin. And while this is happening, right in the midst of all this, this fellow says, I got myself this million-dollar woman, and I'm going to take her to my tent and enjoy it. And in the sight of all the congregation of the children of Israel who were weeping before the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And then it tells how Phinehas saw this, and he took a javelin and he plunged it into the man and into the woman and killed them. And God pronounced a blessing on him for being zealous for the Lord. And the plague was stayed. But get the picture here. They're sinning. God is judging them. It says 24,000 died. And right in the middle of all that, he goes on ahead with that sin. Brings her in right in front of everybody. And of course, he lost his life, and she lost her life as a result. But that's brazen. That's bold. Well, that's how these false teachers are. They riot in the very daytime. They have no conscience, no concern for their testimony and how they influence others. They were leading them in the wrong path by their example as well as by their instructions. And as a result, they would receive the reward of unrighteousness. But you can see just how bad they were and why it was that Peter is warning us against them and pronouncing severe judgments upon them. Let's not follow their lead. We'll close in prayer.